You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. With more than 30 weekly podcasts, HRN has something for every food lover. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
Today's program is brought to you by Corin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. For more information, visit corin.com.
Hello, welcome to Japanese. I'm your host, Akiko Tema, a food writer and director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deep understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting live from Brooklyn, New York. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every deal in the supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi ramen in izakaya, but what is exactly are they? Japanese food is still a mystery for many people, and I try to demystify it in this program with my good guests. My guest today is Maurice Dudley, who is an awamori specialist based in Okinawa. Awamori is a very important traditional alcohol beverage from Okinawa Prefecture, but its preciousness is yet to be known outside Japan. Maurice went to Japan for the first time in 1994 as an airman. He was stationed at a U.S. military base in Okinawa and fell in love with awamori. Since then, he has continued to deepen his knowledge of and passion for awamori, and now he owns an awamori bar and trading company, Blue Habu, in Okinawa City. So today we'll discuss how Maurice discovered the charm of awamori, what awamori is and difference between shochu, how to drink awamori, the latest of the awamori industry, and much, much more. But before we start, Japan is available on the Heritage Radio Network website, as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. So please go to iTunes, Stitcher, or Spotify, whichever you listen to, and subscribe to Japan Needs. And please write a review. We really appreciate your feedback. And another announcement. So we are running the summer fundraiser. So Heritage Radio Network, or HRN, is a not-for-profit organization, and we run over 35 member-supported weekly podcasts to empower the world through food. And this month, we are asking you to join us. By supporting HRN during this membership drive, you'll become a part of our community. And so please go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate to become an HRN member today. And thanks to an anonymous donor, all donations coming in through the end of July, from now to July 31st, will be matched up to $10,000. So now it's time to reach out to your networks. And as a thank you for your tax-deductible donation, you can receive a regional swag as well. And again, the web address is heritageradionetwork.org/donate. And thank you so much. All right, so let's start a conversation with Maurice Dudley. Hello, Maurice. Welcome back to welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you.
So, yeah, you're in Okinawa, and thank you for staying up so late as well. Thank you. All right. So first, to get to know you, where are you from, and what did you eat when you grew up?
Oh, okay. I grew up in New Mexico. My dad was also in the Air Force, and that's where he was stationed when I was a youngster. I grew up there, and my mom is from South Carolina, so we basically ate southern foods, popular foods in the southern parts of the United States. Mm. It was a little bit of, you know, of course, Mexican food as well, growing up in New Mexico, so
right.
A little bit of everything.
Yeah, but, you know, considering where you are. So, by the way, how long have you been in Okinawa at this point?
27 years.
Oh, wow. Amazing.
Yeah.
Wow.
Actually, longer than I've been in the United States.
Oh, wow. You're Okinawan, officially.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So, and then you went to Japan for the first time as an airman and was stationed in Okinawa. So, how did you like it for the first time you went from... You know, it was the first time 27 years ago. So did you like Japan and Okinawa right away?
Right away, it was, of course, very different from growing up in the desert of New Mexico. And, you know, it's one of those expectations versus reality things that I experienced firsthand. You know, growing up, I was kind of fascinated with other cultures and Asian culture specifically. from, you know, Discovery Channel, National Geographic. You know, those were the days before we had internet. You know, we actually went to the library to look up stuff. And, you know, the television was pumping out cool shows on Discovery. And so when I got here, I was like, yeah, I'm going to Japan. I'm expecting, you know, Osaka, Kyoto, Nagoya. But I get here and it's like, this is different. There's so much concrete. Buildings were all, you know, built with concrete instead of wooden structures. So it's like, what is this now? Okinawa. This isn't Japan, but okay, it's cool.
Right.
It was still something totally different from what I was used to, you know.
So. Right. I'm sure impressed by the beautiful beach.
Oh, yes.
So, yeah, and then you were stationed, but after the end of your assignment, you managed to stay in Japan. So how did you do that, and why did you want to stay in Japan?
Yes, in the Air Force, it may be different from other branches of the military, but in the Air Force, we were able to separate on island, which is, you know, basically you're doing the paperwork to separate from the military, but you're allowed to stay on the island as opposed to going back to the United States to do the paperwork. So it was, for me, the process was fairly easy because I was in college studying Asian studies, by the way, and I was employed a part-time job. So, I had something to show that I had a plan. When I was getting out, it wasn't just I was going to live under the bridge or in front of Lawson. You know, I actually had a plan, and I made it sound good. I had to write a letter and everything, and they approved it. I was like, all right, sweet. I don't have to go back to the U.S. because I really wanted to stay a little bit longer.
Right.
And, you know, here I am 27 years later.
Right. But, well, I didn't know that you could get a part-time job as you were in the military.
Well, I was working for the military.
Okay.
So that helped. You know, I was able to show that, yeah, I'm actually have a plan for what I want to do, and I actually had a part-time job, so that helped.
So you're curious, just wanted to stay in a foreign culture? That's why you wanted to stay there?
I think so, yes. I was, at that time, I was, like I said, I was studying Asian studies, so it just really felt where I felt comfortable being here because I was trying to learn Japanese a little bit more. This is actually my second time. The first time I was here for 2 years, I left, went to North Carolina. And then I had an opportunity to come back, and I came back and I said, okay, the second time I'm going to actually study Japanese because I saw that how beneficial it was if you actually spoke a little bit. And I was able to, you know, order my favorite booze in Japanese. So I was like, okay, I'm going to study a little bit more.
Right. So. Okay. And then, so obviously, you liked Awamori. That was a part of the reason you wanted to be in Japan. But how did you discover Awamori? And what was your first impression?
I think just hanging out with Japanese friends, they would introduce me to, you know, the izakaya. I had never heard of, you know, been to an izakaya before. So it was hanging out with them and drinking with them. I was typically the only American. So my favorite thing at the time was umeshu, you know, the plum wine. So I would drink the plum wine and they would say, why are you drinking that? It's more expensive. And I was like, what? You know, I thought we could drink whatever we want. Yeah, but why don't you try beer or try some awamori? I was like, well, what's awamori? I know from the clubs, the free awamori, like they're saying, no, this is different. You have a choice of, you see the bottles there, and they'll kind of break it down to me. And then that's when I learned about awamori and then the different styles of enjoying awamori. Different types of drinks that you can enjoy.
Right. So for listeners who are not familiar with umeshu is like a much sweeter plum drink. And it's not the mainstream drink. But yeah, so it's interesting. You came with entrance of mushu and then went into Mawoyu, which is very different.
Right. Yeah, I think at that young age, I didn't really care for beer. So it was like you said, umishu, it was really sweet. So I said, okay, let me try it. That was my go-to, was plum wine on the rocks.
Right. Oh, wow. That sounds good, too. okay. So, I heard that you are pretty, curious about new culture. So other Air Force members were hanging around with themselves, but you just tried to venture out and then you made friends in Japan, right?
Right.
So you are by nature a very curious person. I really admire.
Just trying to do different things and, experience. Because I felt like if you're going to live in a foreign country, why not, learn about as much as you can about the culture?
I totally 100% agree.
I still feel that way, so.
Oh, now that's what you do now is what you do now, so.
Right.
So we're going to talk about what you do now in a moment, but let's talk about Awamori first, because most of our listeners have no idea what Awamori is. What is Awamori and what is the difference between shochu?
Awamori is Okinawa's indigenous spirits. It dates back to, 14th century, so about over 600 years of history. And it's how can I describe it? It's made with black koji, rice, and of course yeast and water, and it's the ingredients are basically that's it, and that's the difference I think with shochu. You have white koji and yellow koji that can also be used, but there are also additional ingredients in the second stage of fermentation that they add to shochu, for example a sweet potato, brown sugar, barley. But those cannot be added to Ryukyu Awamori, traditional Awamori. That's, I think, the biggest difference.
Right. Yeah, and historically, Okinawa was kind of, it belonged to Japan, but back again and not. And then there's like very global, complicated region. So I think officially last time was returned to Japan in 1972 or something. So So it's a very beautiful culture and it's very independent. And of course, the climate is very different. So and the Awamori is made with Thai rice, which is like what? Because Japan is famous for Japanese rice. So there's a reason, right, for they using Thai rice, because the whole production of that distilled beverage came from the south, not developed in Japan like shochu. So, and then...
Yes.
Right, and then the kurokoji, and the koji is the malt that's used to ferment everything delicious in Japanese cuisine. But I heard kurokoji is good to kill bacteria.
Right?
And whereas I think if you go up to north, like the sake rice is made with shirokoji, kikoji, because they don't need that strong bacteria killer like kurokoji. So there's like a reason and it was developed uniquely, right?
Yes.
Right.
That's the citric acid that's present in kurokoji, and it's needed because of the higher, like you said, the higher temperatures here and humidity here in Okinawa.
Right. Yeah. And then the shochu can be made with kurokoji, shirokoji, which is a mutation of kurokoji, I guess, and kikoji. It's like three, different colors of koji that's used to make delicious alcoholic beverages in Japan, but Awamori is only kurokoji, so that's like interesting geographical reason. So what about the alcohol percentage?
For the most part, you're looking at the low end, maybe 20% alcohol, and up to 44% alcohol by volume. According to Japanese law, anything below 45% ABV can be called awamori. Above 45, it's spirits.
Mm.
So it can no longer be considered awamori if it's above 45.
Right. So, yeah, the average is just so like 30, 40?
30, yeah, yes, around 30 to 40 is about average for awamori.
Mm. Right, because shochu is, what I heard is 80% of shochu in the market is 25% alcohol, right? So it's much higher. Okay, and then, so what is the history? You said that it started in 14th century?
For awamori, yes. And I think because of that, the reason for that is because Okinawa, or that time, during that era, it was known as the Ryukyu Kingdom. Ryukyu Kingdom was a tributary of China. So a lot of that trade and know-how came from that region. And because of the, you know, the tributary relationship of going to China and hosting Chinese dignitaries here in Okinawa, they were trading. Awamori was a trade commodity. So especially the kusu, aged awamori, was really highly valued at that time.
Mm.
Even now, kusu is some of the better awamori.
Right.
Even now, so, yeah.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, so, well, again, this is a reflection of a complicated history of Okinawa or Ryukyu Island back then. So, yeah, I'm curious, you know, along with this Thai rice, that probably, what I heard is there's a sake called lauron in Thailand, and then this looks similar to this. Yeah, that's kind of like another complicated, interesting history of awamori. But traditionally, I mean, awamori has to be made with Thai rice by definition, right?
Not necessarily.
Oh.
I thought so too, but it doesn't have to be made with Thai rice. As a matter of fact, there's one in Ishigaki that uses Ishigaki-grown rice.
Huh, interesting.
Most of the awamori distilleries do use Thai rice because it stands up well to the black koji and the temperatures here in Okinawa. But it's not required. It's the main requirements are, of course, kuro koji, and it has to be made in Okinawa and distilled once, I think, is, you know, as opposed to, you know, multiple distillations.
Right. So the Thai rice versus Japanese rice, which is short grain, and Thai rice is like what's called indica rice, so it's longer.
Yes, yes.
And so the black koji likes to stick to that long grain.
Yes, yes.
Interesting. Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is the whole, I could just go into all the how the koji grows in the long rice or whatever. I'm so curious.
You're like going out. I can sense a question that I won't be able to answer. I'll be like, I have to get back with you on that one.
Okay.
But yeah, you're right though. Yeah.
Right. So we'll come back with the sequel sometime soon.
I have to study up.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah. And then because, you know, sake rice is very nice scientifically, technologically developed, and then the grain of rice, how do you polish it down and how you make the yields higher or how...
Good point.
Right, so...
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, so yeah. I'm just super curious now. So I'm just warning you, next time you come back, you're going to talk about it. Right, so... you mentioned the kusu. So is it very popular? Mm-hmm. What is kusu and how popular is it?
Yes, it is very popular. So, you know, standard awamori is, once it's distilled and bottled, it's pretty much sold as is. But kusu is when they actually age the awamori. And they can age it in multiple types of vessels. As long as it's aged over 3 years, it's considered a kusu. So traditionally, they use clay jars, clay pots to age aomori. And that's where all the flavors are coming off of. It's similar to cask aging for whiskey. You know, all those flavors are coming off the cask, whereas in aomori, it's coming off of that clay pot or wherever you're aging it in. But you can also age it in. There are some aomori blends that are aged in wooden cask, ex-bourbon cask, and then they're blended with standard aomori. There's also the steel tank aged aomori. And that's just because of the capacity. I think most of the distilleries are using those big steel tanks now because you can put more in it, you know, and age more of it. But yes, kusu is very popular. It's, of course, a little bit more expensive than the standard aomori, but the taste, you know, is much better. You know, I'm speaking biased, but it's much better for me personally.
Interesting. Yeah, so I happen to taste clay-aged shochu. And they're not aomori, but clay. I did a compare side-by-side, and clay-aged one has much milder, kind of like a rounded texture. I don't know why, because of the air, like very tiny air circulation going on when you're aging, like 3-5 years. So, I mean, you know, kusu, it's if it's popular, if you go to a bar or retail shops, do you easily find kusu?
I would say yes, it is fairly easy to locate and pick out. Yes.
Okay.
And of course, of course it needs to be labeled as kusu, so it is, you know, it's labeled in the kanji, old sake.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right.
If you know what you're looking for, then yes. If it could be a challenge if you don't know, but
but it's not bad.
That was part of my motivation for studying Japanese, right?
Right. Yeah, you're a very precious, you know, aomori language speaker as well as Japanese language speaker. Right. Yeah. So okay, because when last time I went to Okinawa, first time, last time, it was the same time. I didn't know too much about aomori, but I didn't actively try to find a kusu. So definitely sounds like it's amazing. So do you think the roundness of the taste is better than regular younger aomori?
I would say yes, because there are, depending on the region, you know, some regions have really robust tasting aomori. Especially like Miyako Island, or, you know, I mentioned Ishigaki as well. Those kind of are I would say, are harder flavor, harsher flavor.
Mm.
But once you age them, it kind of matures, it kind of mellows out that harshness, and it's more of a rounded flavor. And you could taste a lot of the, I wouldn't say, some kind of vanilla flavor, maybe toffee flavors coming off of that the aging process.
Okay.
Whereas shochu is more floral, you know, you get some floral or some other notes that aren't really picked up in aomori aging.
Right, that's probably comes from a unique Thai rice and a black koji.
Yes, I think it's a combination of all of those things.
Mm. Right, it's interesting. Like, look at shochu and aomori tend to be like, you know, combined together, called aomori slash shochu or shochu slash aomori. But obviously, they are distinctive from how it's made, how the ingredients. And like you said, kusu is not so much a big deal in shochu. So, okay. So we'll take a quick break here. And when we come back, we'll discuss how to drink aomori. So please stay with us.
Okay.
Today's program is brought to you by Corin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. Corin is proud of their Japanese culture and traditions, but they want you to know that their products are not just for Japanese restaurants. The knives and tableware bring out the best qualities of food from every culture and fit into every restaurant, from French to Pan-Asian to American, and that is why they are located in New York City, where people from every country in the world come to eat. Corin's Tribeca showroom is home to the most extensive collection of Japanese chef knives in the world, including Japan. Stop by to view the exquisitely designed tableware and the rarest natural sharpening stones. They have a whole range of knife services, from repair and rust removal to reshaping and realigning. Corin is dedicated to this ideal, bringing the highest quality Japanese design to your table so you can experience the unparalleled quality of Japanese craftsmanship in your home or restaurant. For more information, visit corin.com.
Hi, I'm Katie Mosman-Wadler, Executive Director of HRN. HRN is dedicated to amplifying voices from all across our food system. Today, I am asking listeners to take part in our summer membership drive by helping sustain our mission to expand the way eaters think about food. As a thank you for this tax-deductible donation, you can receive some great HRN swag, including the HRN cap, wine carrier, or a special spice set from Burlap and Barrel. By becoming a member, you'll play an essential role in keeping nonprofit food radio on the air. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate to become a member today. Thank you for your support.
All right, so welcome back. You're listening to Japan Eats on HRN or Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Akiko Tema, and my guest today is Maurice Dudley, who is an Awamori specialist based in Okinawa Prefecture. So how do you describe the taste of awamori? Like you said, Okusu is, you know, kind of like a camel-y kind of things. But when you pick up a fresh bottle of awamori, how do you describe it? And are there many flavor variations depending on the labels too?
A lot of the awamoris are, because they're all made the same, they're similar flavors. Of course, it's a rice-based spirit, so you're getting that rice flavor. But the Thai rice, I wouldn't say there's so much a difference between the rice flavor. It's just that I think the mouthfeel and the texture-wise is definitely different compared to Japanese rice-based spirits, if that makes any sense. Because the Ishigaki grown rice awamori, it seems to be softer mouthfeel when you're drinking it as opposed to other standard awamoris out there.
So the Okinawa mm-hmm. Prefecture, Okinawa Islands.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's to be aware of the difference between different islands, that's important. This sounds like many flavored variations depending on which island it's made.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. And even within on the Okinawa main island, you know, you have the regional. So you have the southern tip of the island and you have the central part and then northern parts of island. They all have their unique ways of, you know, whether it's the fermentation phase or, you know, the timing of when how long they let the koji sit on the rice. All of that's kind of specific to each distillery because there's only so many things that they can do with awamori anyway. So it's like we can use different yeast or different time frame, maybe it's some water differences to add that little unique flavor to make our brand stand out from everyone else's.
Interesting. Yeah, so I think the long rice tend to be, what I heard, so Okinawa food tend to be rich and thicker, and then to pair with it, the refreshing awamori taste and flavor are very good with that.
Yes.
You know,
Okinawa food. In Okinawa cuisine, we do eat a lot of greasy foods, a lot of pork-based foods. So we need to cut that with awamori, of course. I think that's why it tends to be a higher alcohol percentage that people want. You know, a popular way to enjoy awamori here in Okinawa is mizuwari, or mixing with water. And a lot of times when I mention that to Westerner friends, they're like, why would you do that? You know, because it's just not something you do with other, with probably with no other spirits besides shochu. It's just not really something. So when you're eating with a meal or consuming with a meal, you're mixed with water. And I usually start off with 30% aomori, 70% water. And then, you know, towards the end of the night, you're doing 50-50. Hmm. And then, or you may be doing 70% aomori, 30% water, you know.
Right. Well, it's a very civilized, controlled way to gradually increase alcohol.
Right. Right. And I think that's part of the, for me, that's part of the joy and, you know, the draw of drinking aomori. It's kind of versatile in that you can add water or, you know, add a slice of lemon or add chiquasa, the local lime, the local citrus here in Okinawa. You add some of that to it. There's also a popular, especially with the older men, is they like to drink it with milk.
Yeah, I've heard of that. Wow.
Or with black coffee. Yeah, black coffee is also really popular. Huh. As a matter of fact, when you order aomori at izakaya, they automatically bring an ice pail and, you know, a jug of water. Because they assume that that's how you're going to be drinking it. And then you can also ask for jasmine tea. You can ask for udon tea, you know, to mix with it. So it's pretty versatile in that.
Right. Yeah, so you mentioned actually, you know, Mr. Pork is famous, and shikwasa is a very unique citrus.
Yes.
Right? So Okinawa is rich in local ingredients as well as style of cuisine. So, yeah, and the interesting thing, well, you mentioned shochu and awamori are usually mixed with water, and it's not just like, you know, tap water just pouring over. It's more like a cocktail delicacy in it.
Yeah, right.
So, and also, I don't know if you do an awamori with oyuwari. Oyuwari is kind of Japanese, unique Japanese way to add hot water or like warm water in, with, you know, they mix that with alcohol, delicate alcohol.
Yes.
Right? And it really makes it more flavorful because of the temperature and alcohol comes out. So
it's not really, to be honest, oyuwari is not really a thing in Okinawa. But of course, it is available, but, you know, most of the time it's already hot.
Yeah.
So we're like, just give me some ice and some water.
Right.
You know, or... So I think nowadays, soda water is really popular. So, you know, an aomori highball is really popular now.
Okay. And by the way, you mentioned shikwasa. That's a unique citrus from Okinawa. And how do you describe the taste compared to something like lime or lemon or yuzu?
Yeah, I think it would be closer to yuzu than anything. It's weird. It's kind of a cross between the lemon and lime. It's really small compared to either of those fruits. I think it'd be closer to the yuzu flavor.
But it's not the yuzu.
It's definitely not.
I think that personally, it's more delicate than yuzu.
Yeah.
Right, it's like subtle, and you want to put it everywhere, anywhere, because it's such a refreshing and slightly sweet, but not as biting as lemon or, I mean, yuzu is mild, but even milder than yuzu. So,
yeah.
Right. Oh, lucky you have shikwasa everywhere, and
yeah, but it's kind of seasonal, so it's like you got to be. I don't even know the season, you know. Yeah, but you have to find it when it grows and it's harvested, you know.
Right.
Then you can pick it up fresh. You do see a lot of extract now that you can buy at any time of the year.
Right. I think it's the summer is the peak, and then you have a break, early spring. So, yeah.
Yes, that sounds right. Yeah.
Right. And so, okay, then... So how how do you, I mean, you know, this kind of a silly question maybe, but how do you like awamori compared to other alcoholic beverages? Because you could drink, you know, whiskey or gin or anything else, but what is special to you personally about awamori?
I think it's the fact that you can add water to it, like, or you can, if I feel I just want to drink it on the rocks, that's totally doable, you know, and or I can add some water, or I can add some soda water. Whereas if you're drinking a bourbon or a whiskey, you're kind of limited to what you would be able to do with it. And throughout the night, I don't think you're going to be like sipping on it all night. Whereas with awamori, I could probably kill half a bottle, you know, just with some water.
Right, because it's more neutral. Like, you know, the other gin or, I mean, vodka, it's like multiple distillation doesn't leave you much of flavor, but it's more like alcohol kick. But yeah, it sounds like awamori's unique taste can make you feel happy and you never get bored, but it doesn't interrupt. You don't get tired of it.
Right. And I think also, I don't know if it's scientifically proven, but I think you have less of a hangover the next day because you're mixing it with water or, you know, yeah, most of the time I'm mixing it with water. So I'm rehydrating at the same time.
Right. And of course,
whereas if you,
and then I eat with food. That helps.
Right. At the same time. So like if I were drinking a beer all night, you know, I would definitely be feeling that in the morning. It'd be sitting in my stomach. You know.
Right. Okay.
I'd be hating life.
Right. And then Okinawa, of course, you know, the blue zone idea of people on Earth who live longer. There are five regions called like blue zones, and Okinawa is one of them. So I'm not sure awamori is contributing to the lengthy life of people, the healthy and lengthy life of people. So
maybe, yeah.
Right. Okay. And our listeners include people in the beverage industry. So for bartenders, mixologists, what is the advantage of using awamori in the cocktails?
I think it won't really overpower the mixers. It mixes well with basically any mixture. So if you're reaching for a bottle of gin, you know, you have to think about how much juniper it has and other spices that it has in it and what you can pair with it. Whereas with awamori, you don't really have so much complex ingredients in there. They are done, so you're just what you have is what you get, and it doesn't overpower anything.
As far as I can think of, awamori is very regional, terroir driven drink, and then very delicate, flavorful, yet you never get tired of it, and healthier option. And you feel better next day.
It has been said to be a healthier option. Yes.
Right. Okay. And do you know what? When I was in Okinawa and I went to a supermarket, there's like tens and almost hundreds of labels. So how many awamori distilleries exist?
There are 47 active distilleries between, you know, Okinawa main island and the outlying islands.
Oh, wow. Wow. Oh, that's amazing. Well, considering how big Okinawa prefecture is. So, and then each distillery, I would imagine, makes it a multiple labels. So,
yes. Of course, they have their flagships brands, but then they also make, smaller brands off of that. And there are beginning to make, well, they've always been making a lot of liqueurs, but I think you see a lot more liqueurs nowadays.
Right.
Awamori based. Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Right. So is the number of distilleries increasing or decreasing?
I don't think they are decreasing yet, but perhaps in the future, they have been getting a tax relief from the Japanese government, and that's supposed to end in 2026, I believe. So I'm wondering what that effect will have on active distilleries, because it'll cost more to produce Aomori at that point, I assume. So,
Right.
But at the moment, you know, I don't see a decrease.
Right. Well, I think my imagination, my prediction is that, you know, UNESCO gave Japanese cuisine as the intangible heritage status in, I think, 2013. So I don't think they're going to stop doing that. And because Aomori is such a beautiful traditional product. And I mean, Japanese sake has been promoted, shochu now being promoted. Mm-hmm. And why not Aomori, right? It's just so, so unique, so precious. So,
right.
Yeah. Okay, and so by the way, do you have any good examples of Aomori-based cocktails you've tasted?
I would say it goes well with any basic citrus-based, so any fruit-based cocktail. But I also like what I call Aogroni. It's basically the Negroni, but you substitute the gin with Aomori.
Hmm.
I enjoy that because I like Negroni anyway. So, you know, it just really goes well with Aomori, especially a lot of the Kusu Aomori that has, you know, some of the additional flavors.
Hmm.
Natural flavors, I would say.
Hmm. Right. Yeah, Negroni. I like Negroni too, and that kind of slight bitterness and sweetness, mm-hmm. so that can work together.
Right.
Okay. And so now I'm going to talk about your cool business. So in 2016, you founded your own company, Blue Habu
yes.
Trade Group.
Yes.
So what is your business?
Blue Habu, it's basically an import-export business that I just kind of jumped right into. I didn't really... You know, I did a lot of thinking back and forth. Should I do it? Maybe I shouldn't, you know. And I said, I'm just going to do it. So I jumped in. Yeah, because I was just like, I just keep talking about it. I'm not going to do anything. So at the time, when I was thinking about starting my own business, import-export, a friend of mine was into homebrewing. He was a homebrewer. He was leaving Okinawa, going back to the U.S. And he said, you should look into craft beer. And I know craft beer, and I like, you know, I like alcohol. So let me look into what's required to import alcohol and to retail alcohol. So yeah, I picked up a license for that, and I've basically started importing right away in 2016 after I got the license.
Right. So what kind of products do you import and export?
So I import spirits from Sri Lanka, Peru, and South Africa. And I imported wine from France. I have experience in that as well. And as far as exporting, I have experience exporting Aomori, actually, to California, and we involved in a project to export Japanese sake to India. So I'm looking forward to getting that underway.
Oh wow, interesting! And I'm looking at actually your website. You have a very good products, and is that how you chose? You like them, and you really decided to sell them because very cool products.
The majority of, you know, the products that I have posted are my self-import, but there are some, especially some whiskeys, that I also kind of just threw up there also, because I figure I have a website, I might as well put more up there. But primarily it's the products that I self-import that I need to post up. It was kind of if I like it, then I can kind of talk about it. You know, if I don't know anything about it, it doesn't pick up my interest. So,
Yeah, that's the way to go. And I really like that. Before you thought about it, you started the business. And I really like that. Yeah, I should learn so much. Like, you know, you tend to think too much and then not doing it. So
Yeah. Well, I did my years of thinking. So eventually you got to do it, you know.
Right. That's true. Okay. And then, so you said you are exporting Awamori to California, but is that something well received because people don't know much about Awamori?
It's kind of sporadic. It's not an ongoing project, but when we do have a request for it, then yeah, we fill it at that time. So it's been a while. It's been, you know, especially, you know, because of COVID, kind of slows everything down as well.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, there is a new law just introduced on July 1st in New York. Now, shochu can be sold as shochu as far as alcohol level is 24% or less. So I'm expecting shochu is going to be more popular because it used to be sold under soju, which is Korean beverage, which is like a national prize issue. But now a lot of shochu producers don't have that identity issue. So they start selling shochu in New York, I'd assume. So,
right.
And that said, shochu already is popular in certain bars in America because bartenders started to look for something interesting and the shochu works well. But good advantage of Awamori is that Awamori has a high alcohol, which is important for bartenders, right? In mixing in their cocktails, they cannot get buried in other flavors. So yeah, Awamori really think has a strategic advantage as Japanese traditional beverage. So I hope your export business of Awamori is going to thrive sometime very soon.
Yeah, I hope so. I think we will see more lower ABV Awamori as a result of that the new law.
Mm.
Because hopefully it's not just New York. Hopefully other states will pick up on it. And then we may see, we already do have lower ABV Awamori, 25%. I've seen 15%. Mm. So I think the distilleries may be looking to do that, you know, offer a lower ABV because of that. And also I think we see events, especially for younger female audience here in Okinawa, kind of to try to get them interested in Awamori. So because traditionally it was the old Ojisan go-to drink,
you know, old man's drink.
old man like me, that was our drink, and everyone else was turned off by it. But now we see the younger female audience gravitating towards kind of the lower ABV and some of the liqueur, Awamori-based liqueurs that are available.
Right. I mean, you know, looking back, sake used to be, just until recently, the old man's drink. Then now it's such a cool, sophisticated drink. So, yeah, you never know what's going to happen. And I think you are the key person to make it happen as a cool drink. Yeah. And, so the your other business, within the business, you own a bar, right, called Blue Habu in Okinawa City.
Yes, kind of.
Okay.
It is a bar, but it's not a fully stocked or fully operated full-time thing. It's a location that I have that I can host events. I wanted to do like tastings. My dream one day is to do a sake shochu Awamori tasting event, where I think there are a lot of people who don't know the difference between the three. right? I can remember a time where I didn't know the difference either. So I'm sure there are other Americans here who don't know. What's the difference between sake shochu and aomori? What is that? So just to have a place that I can do things like that and say, this is sake, this is shochu, this is kusu aomori, you know.
Right.
I think would be interesting.
Totally. I wish you can just bring that idea to the States when you promote aomori, because I never seen that, but yeah. That's a very, yeah, very good way to promote each.
I think it's a good way to look at it instead of like doing just sake, just shochu, which those are all good, but let's put them together and then and do experiences that way as well.
Right. Yeah. Wow. That's great. Well, keep me posted. That sounds amazing. So,
yeah. Okay. See, now I have to do it. Now that I said it.
You said it. You do it.
Right. I said it out loud. Uh-oh.
Yeah. We have listeners in 190 countries, so you can go back.
Yeah. So that's what Blue Habu, the location, the physical location is. It's also allows me to sell retail from that location.
Right. So that's in Okinawa City, right?
Yes, Okinawa City.
Right. So within the main island of Okinawa. Right. Okay. So I'll look forward to seeing you there next time I go to Okinawa.
Okay. Yeah, definitely.
Right. And so what are your plans and dreams?
I'm on the right track, but I definitely have a lot to learn still about the, you know, doing business in Japan, about aomori, and definitely I need to boost my Japanese speaking ability and reading, especially reading in Japanese, you know.
Right. Well, but do you enjoy that?
I do enjoy it, but I make mistakes every day, but I don't let those mistakes, you know, pull me down. It's like you have to try, you know. If I don't try, I'll never get any better. So I think that would be a goal for me, is to improve that, the Japanese speaking ability, and to be able to reach more people.
Right. Yeah, I think language is just language. It's just a tool, but through learning language, you really get to know what's behind, right? So that's awesome.
Right.
Right. Well, my Japanese, if I you ask me, you know, write by hand kanji and completed kanji, I used to remember, like, my hand remembers, but it's like, well, I'm so used to typing, so I'm probably, I have to restudy Japanese kanji, like, complicated ones, like, what? How do I spell it?
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So, so do you sometimes come back to the States?
It's been a while since I've been back, you know, before the pandemic, you know, it was probably the last time that I was there. But I would like to get back here and participate in some of the events, the industry-wide events that I think someone representing aomori should be, you know, involved in some of those.
I strongly agree. And I hope I can see you here in New York too, because there's a potential and there's so many Japanese restaurants looking for good products. And I think aomori needs a place to shine, as they should be in Okinawa. So it's just that what you do is just amazing. So yeah, good luck.
Thank you.
And so where can we find your updates online and on social media?
I think that I'm pretty active on Instagram at Blue Habu, is BLUEHABU, and on Facebook is at Blue Habu Trade. Facebook and Twitter also.
Okay.
Blue Habu Trade. Yeah.
Right. So
those are the.
I'm so sorry. Yeah, but by the way, what is Habu? HABU.
Oh yeah, we didn't talk about that. HABU, Habu. Habu is the indigenous snake, pit viper, here in Okinawa. If you're familiar with habu sake, a lot of people are familiar with habu sake.
I've never had it, but is that something to energize you or something?
Yeah, that's the snake wine. Again, that also you know, has a lot of that history from Southeast Asia and the tributary relationship that the Yukou Kingdom had with China. All of that snake wine history and production practices have come to Okinawa. So we also have a snake wine known as Habushu. But the Habu, you know, the Habu is the indigenous snake, poisonous snake for here in Okinawa.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of people ask me, why blue Habu? It's just one of those Okinawa specific names that I thought sounded cool, but I didn't want to pick Oki something or Okinawa something. I thought that was overdone. So I was kind of wanted to be unique and original.
Yeah, I really think it's very smart and cool thing, because your logo on your website is a blue Habu and the ocean, blue ocean of Okinawa too. So that really done. So, okay. So thank you so much for joining us today, Marisa. And I hope I can speak to you on the show again.
Okay. Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, so listeners, if you have any questions or comments about the show or suggestions for show topics or guests, please contact us at japanese@heritageradionetwork.org or at kikotema.com. Japanese is a weekly program and always available at heritageradionetwork.org, as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. Our engineer is Matt Patterson, and thank you for listening. I will see you next week. Japanese is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.